We're talking about 529 plans on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. These are the state-sponsored investment accounts, like EdVest here in Wisconsin, that you can contribute to and put toward your child's education expenses, like tuition, like fees and books. According to the College Savings Plans Network, 529s have ballooned in value. Americans have socked away $464 billion across over 15 million accounts. That is mid-year data. Do you have a 529 account for your child? What do you notice about its growth or your contributions? What does saving for your kids' college, you know, how does that fall in your financial priorities? 800-642-1234. Ashley Luthern is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She's reported on 529s in a series called Steps to Success, focused on opportunities for Milwaukee youth. Ashley, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start out in Oklahoma and the Seed for Oklahoma Kids experiment. What was this long-term study about?
So the Seed OK experiment is really zooming out a little bit. It's examining the broader concept of children's savings accounts. And they're also known as child development accounts. And it's a little bit similar to the baby bond idea. There's a nest egg that grows with the child, it's invested. And the idea is to really provide more of an opportunity for all children. And so most of these child savings accounts that are state sponsored in other states, and what was used in Oklahoma for this experiment, they tend to use the 529 college savings platform because it already exists in, I believe, almost every state except for one. And so in Seed OK, there's this long-running study that began in 2007 where researchers picked children at random from state birth records, and they had a cohort where kids got the account, they got an initial deposit, and then there was another group, the control group, where they did not get that automatic account with a deposit, but they still got information about how to open one. And the results, the experiment's still ongoing. It's a long-term study. But what they've found so far is that for children who had the account opened automatically with a deposit, they not only have their parents and families managed to save more for college or future educational expenses, there have been all these other really interesting effects. It's been correlated with families having higher aspirations and expectations for their children. There have been lower rates of maternal depression reported. And all of this has been gathered through in-depth surveys and interviews with the participants.
And I would imagine the study is large enough to draw such conclusions.
Yes. And as you might expect, obviously, you've reported on lots of different kinds of studies involving social science. Randomized control is sort of the gold standard for this kind of research, and it can be really hard to do. So this study in Oklahoma is pretty much the only one that I'm aware of that is a true randomized control and trying to, you know, tease out some of the effects of actually having this automatic enrollment and deposit accounts in this broader public policy. And so when state lawmakers in Nebraska and Nevada and Rhode Island and Pennsylvania and Maine were looking to create programs for newborns in those states that are very similar, they're often citing this Oklahoma research as well as other research. This idea has been around for a couple decades, this idea of children's savings accounts, again, goes to a broader issue of baby bonds. That's the one that people might be most familiar with, but a lot of the state level policies decide to use the 529 platform. So there's a broad policy, and then there's also, of course, as you mentioned in the introduction, individual actions that parents can take because anyone can open a 529 account.
We're going to get to that in just a moment here as we talk with Ashley Luthern, investigative reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, discussing her reporting on these state-sponsored 529 investment programs that help families save for college as early as newborns in this one study. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Ashley, you also found that many Americans aren't aware of 529 accounts and that there's this really vast knowledge gap about what 529s are. And I know I experienced this knowledge gap personally firsthand when my daycare provider told me she had just opened a small savings account for her son. And I asked her, is it a 529? And she said it's just a regular savings that she would just put her pocket change into. And the very next day, like, I printed off literature from Louisiana's 529 website and I gave it to her and told her about what a 529 is. What did you find about gaps in the knowledge people have about these savings tools?
Kate, I think what you describe is incredibly common. Like you, I also had a personal experience. I recently became a parent myself. I was unaware of 529 plans. And I had a colleague who said, oh, you should really considering opening one for your child. And that led me down this path to reading more about them. And I think it's one of these things where if you do know about them, you just assume that everyone knows about them, but there is this gap. Surveys have repeatedly shown that, you know, a majority of Americans, usually around 2/3, pretty consistently either haven't heard of a 529 plan or they're not exactly sure what it's for, that it's an investment savings account to be used for education. And so the goal with the reporting was not only to look at broader policy ideas around these accounts, children's savings accounts broadly, but to really try to bring practical information for our readers and for people across Wisconsin to do this. You know, I spoke, you mentioned EdVest. I interviewed people from DFI and EdVest, and one of the things that they are really focused on is trying to increase visibility and awareness of EdVest in particular, because that's a 529 platform that anyone can access online just by themselves. It takes a $25 deposit to open an account, and that's really it. And so again, there's this gap, and it's one of these concepts that, frankly, research has shown it tends to be used by wealthier families. And it's, again, if you know about it, you know about it, and you kind of assume everyone does. But there is this very real gap.
Let's bring in a call now. Maggie is joining us from Madison. Hi, Maggie. Go ahead. What would you like to say about 529s?
Hey, I was just curious. I know, so my little cousin just started going to college, and her family had set up a 529 for her, but it seemed to affect the amount of financial aid that she could get. And I was just curious how, especially for like lower income families, how having that like large 529 could affect how much financial aid that student could get.
Maggie, thank you. That's a really good question, Ashley.
Absolutely. That's a question that came up a lot in the reporting, and that's a question that EdVest and other folks here in Milwaukee who are administering a local program, they get that a lot. And so the way it's been explained to me is that that if a parent opens a 529 or a grandparent, the effect on financial aid is it is relatively minimal compared to other savings account mechanisms, because the asset, the money in the account, is not considered an asset for the student themselves. Whereas perhaps if there was a savings account in their names or some other kind of fund, that would actually have a greater effect on financial aid ability. There are other rules that go along with that. And on EdVest, they do have the very specific, specific percentage, and I apologize, I don't have that handy.
Okay.
As to, you know, how it kind of factors into financial aid eligibility. And so it does factor in. It ultimately depends on, you know, the amount that's in there. If it's a very large account, that certainly may impact it a little bit more. But I really encourage people to reach out to EdVest if that is through the account that they have, as well as, you know, whatever account, because you can use 529s in other states. Even if you're a Wisconsin resident, you can find one that's the best for your family, and really try to really ask those questions. There are webinars, there are help tools that can help you sort that out. But from what I've been told, it's relatively minimal compared to other savings mechanisms.
We have Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative journalist Ashley Luthern has looked into state-sponsored investment accounts for college savers, various ways states promote them as a savings tool, and where the gaps are. Are you a parent of a college student? What did you wish you knew about saving for your child's education? Would you like to see state lawmakers consider a government-funded program? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Ashley Luthern here on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about 529 funds and whether seed money could put a young child on a college-bound path with help from a state-sponsored investment contribution into a 529. Withdrawals from 529 accounts are tax-free, by the way, as long as that money goes toward eligible expenses like tuition, like college fees, books, supplies, college housing. Do you think a statewide program with automatic enrollment would benefit children here? Do you have a plan to save for your kids' education? 800-642-1234 to join in. Ashley Lutheran of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has reported on 529s as part of a series on Milwaukee youth and stays with us. Ashley, let's explore the Milwaukee program Fund My Future, launched in 2018, a savings accounts for kindergartners. What do you know there?
So Milwaukee has a program, just like you said, Fund My Future. It is supported through private donations. And just a note, many of the other programs that are statewide in other states are funded through philanthropic efforts, private donations. The government support of it typically comes from administering the accounts through the 529 plan. And in Milwaukee, there's a goal to get every K-5 student set up with a $25 EdVest account. And actually, Milwaukee's Common Council's Personnel and Finance Committee will be hearing updates on Fund My Future later today during a committee meeting. And the goal is to try to, again, as you mentioned, build this college-bound mindset among Milwaukee's young people, and just not even just focus solely on college, but what comes after school, and bringing in the idea of really investing in our young people in the city.
You talked with United Way's Vice President of Community Impact on how this work is addressing racial inequity. How do these accounts speak to that and work toward racial equity?
So the idea of having a children's savings account program is this idea that, you know, all it gets to that idea of awareness in a way that we were talking about earlier. And the idea is you're trying to set all kids up for success because they're going to have these accounts. They're going to have a seed deposit. You can talk about college, but if there's not a pathway to get there, and you can talk about educational achievement, and if kids are doing all the things they're supposed to be doing, but they and their families don't see a financial pathway to getting there, it may stymie some of that. It may stymie some of the achievement that they're able to reach. And so the United Way has invested in this as a program, and it is the main fiscal partner with Milwaukee's program for that reason. There's a lot of academic research, as I mentioned before, that can back this up. You know, William Elliott, who's a professor who's literally co-authored a book about this, about these concepts, makes the point that, you know, what can you expect from a small dollar account? It changes things like parental depression and kids' social emotional development and expectations about the future.
Wow. You know, when you look at the Fund My Future program, and this is a program at the beginning of the school year, had accounts for, you know, in the neighborhood of more than 300 children. We know there are many, many more children, kindergartners in Milwaukee. What challenges does this Fund My Future program face?
So there are some very real logistical challenges that they have been working on over the past few years. The main thing is, as these You want the account to follow the child, obviously. And there are very real data sharing and privacy concerns when it comes to districts sharing and individual schools sharing student data with the city. So for example, with Fund My Future, as children age, they want to add more incentives. So for example, if a child's hitting attendance benchmarks in fourth grade, then they would get a little bit more money included into their Fund My Future account. And so it's really important to be able to track that. So then obviously when a student graduates, they can use those funds as well. Right now, there's still they're still working on a data sharing agreement with Milwaukee Public Schools that they hope will be a broader blueprint for other schools that they work with. It's not just a program in MPS, it's in other schools as well. There are about 25 schools participating as of this academic year. And so what Fund My Future did was, you know, instead of going broad-based, as they, I think, originally planned based off of their initial announcements of this program, they are going by cohorts and they're working with individual schools to get parents to sign off on consent forms so that parents know that, again, they're saying, yes, it's okay for my students, individualized number to be linked with their account so then it can track. What is important to note is that all of the students in the classroom for these participating schools are getting the financial education and the classroom discussions that come along with schools participating in Fund My Future.
Okay, so there's that education component as well. But what happens if the child moves out of Milwaukee or moves out of Wisconsin for that matter?
So those are things that Fund My Future is really thinking about, and they're making rules around that. So if children move out of a participating school, but they're still in Milwaukee, then those funds stay with them. If they move out of Milwaukee or out of the state, it's my understanding that there currently is a discussion about how to handle those accounts. If those accounts kind of return back to the Omnibus General account, or if they just stay static right there, because again, the goal is to support students in Milwaukee.
We're talking with Ashley Lutheran, who writes about public safety social issues for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, as we discuss 529 programs, what states are doing to promote college savings, and what specifically is going on in Milwaukee with the Fund My Future program. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Ashley, you know, at the legislative level, you spoke with lawmakers from other states who say funding 529 programs is a bipartisan issue. This, you know, you can work across the aisle on this issue. Legislation on these 529 accounts hasn't gained traction among lawmakers here in Wisconsin. What are you seeing?
I think there is some discussion, but so far there hasn't been a formal policy put forward in the state of Wisconsin. Now, I do know that some representatives here in the state legislature are interested in the idea. They're interested in some of the baby bonds ideas. There has been proposed legislation around that concept, but as far as something that would be linked directly to education, we haven't seen that. In other states, this tends to... Because of the focus on education, the focus on preparing young people, not just for them as individuals and for their families to be prepared for the future, but for the state's, you know, other states' workforce needs changing, just like Wisconsin's is. That's where a lot of that bipartisan support has managed to coalesce, because it is specific to education. It can be tailored to add incentives for things that might be attractive to lawmakers of both parties. So for example, in some states, there's extra incentives if parents open their own accounts and set up regular contributions. And in some states, there's also, you know, incentives for children who perhaps maybe their families qualify for some sort of public assistance. So they may get an extra deposit here or there. So there's a lot of different ways that policy can be used with these accounts.
Yeah, tax breaks as well. Lisa wrote by email and asked, is it better to pay down my own student loan debt or put money toward a 529 for my kids? And just wants to know if family members can also contribute to 529s as well.
Yes. Yeah, so I'll start with the second question first, which is that once a 529 account is opened, anyone can contribute to it. And also there's no limit for the number of accounts that an individual child can have. So if, you know, different relatives wanted to set up different accounts, that is possible. Again, you may have different financial aid considerations down the line with that. But if you as a parent open an account, again, with EdVest, you get a little code and you can send it to friends and family who maybe want to contribute, and they can do that. As far as the question of whether or not to pay down your own student loan debt before taking care of your child, you know, I strongly recommend, I am not a financial advisor. I know in general from some of the experts I spoke with that there often is a, there should be, you know, it comes down to this idea of financial mindset, what's most important to your family, to your long-term financial goals. And I know that, for example, there's a lot of advice that people should save for retirement, or make sure that that's a priority before necessarily, you know, saving for their child's future education. But in general, I would also note that in Wisconsin, legislation was adopted that kind of trickled down from the federal level so that people who do have outstanding student loan debt can use money from EdVest, from 529 plans to help pay that down up to $10,000.
That's good to know. Ashley, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Ashley Luthern, investigative journalist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We have a link to the Steps to Success reporting at WPR.org/mornings. Coming up, we check in with the president of the Wisconsin Technical College System. Morna Foy is here. News update is next. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Wisconsin colleges have lost thousands of students. Fall enrollment numbers show no signs of recovery from last year's declines. That's according to new national headcount data from the National Student Clearinghouse Research Center. We're checking in on how the technical college system is responding, set against a labor market with businesses just clamoring for workers. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What questions do you have for Morna Foy, president of the Wisconsin Technical College System? It's 800-642-1234. President Foy, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. Starting with enrollment and what you're seeing, you know, enrollment at the state's technical colleges have been declining for years. What does the fall look like for you?
You know, it's actually, we've seen a little bit of a bump up from last year. As you know, we talked about that before. We did have a pretty significant drop, more so in the number of students rather than in the number of credits or classes of students that were coming, were taking. And as we discussed, that was a little unusual for us because there were, the economy was in tough shape, and that's usually when we see enrollment growth. But the lack of childcare, the need to do at-home schooling throughout the state, the need to maybe make up for lost wages in the early part of the academic year, you know, made it a little tougher. I think that now as the economy is coming back, schools are opening up more. Those are the things that have improved the situation for us a bit. But, you know, I think we are struggling just as other four-year, two-year institutions across the country are because of the pandemic and also because, you know, there's just been a lot of change in what people's plans were that were disrupted by the pandemic. And the good thing in our perspective is that we are we're prepared to deal with these kinds of multiple demands of our students. We've always had majority of adult working students. And so we are just doubling down on those options that support those students and also ensure that employers can count on a talent pipeline.
Yeah, that things, talent pipeline. Yeah. I mean, you know, many, many companies are just desperate for workers. And I know you're hearing that message loud and clear from every corner. It was interesting when you testified before the State Senate Committee on Universities and Technical Colleges back in April, lawmakers really wanted to know from you, how nimble are you at opening and closing programs in response to these shifting market conditions that businesses are facing and the demands for workers with specific skills. And I'm wondering, can you tell us about your responsiveness there and speak to that?
Absolutely. That's something that the technical colleges put a lot of time and effort into. And it's also something that we take a lot of pride in. We do change our programming up quite a bit, quite regularly. We open about as many new programs as we close every year. That can range from anywhere from 30 to 60 new program opportunities. But it's not just the programs itself, it's how we deliver them that is changed regularly. For example, we've always done apprenticeships for our, you know, over a century. But now we're doing offering that learn and, you know, while you earn opportunity in a lot of new areas and in new disciplines and new industries. We are stacking credentials in more of our program options. So you can come in, take a short-term credential, go in, back into the workplace at a higher pay, and then come back to college and not have to repeat work, but to pick up where you left off and build the next credential on your pathway to an associate degree or even a bachelor's degree from one of our four-year partners. So things like that, the use of technology to make it more possible for students to determine whether they're going to be able to make class today in person or whether they're going to have to jump online and go virtually because, for example, their babysitter had to cancel.
Oh, wow. So they can even make those decisions on the fly, class to class, day to day, based on their shifting situation.
That's our goal. I mean, I won't tell you that we're there 100% right now, but over time, we are striving to be truly student-driven an education option, which means that students are going to be able to do that more and more. And I think that the pandemic, you know, if you want to find anything good out of this past year and a half, one of the things that it has done is made us realize what is possible and that we have a lot of options available to us with appropriate resources, of course, and, you know, just with some effort on our part and on students' part, because it does take their, you know, they have to learn how to learn differently as well.
I want to touch on transfer agreements and this needing a clear roadmap to a four-year degree if that student is taking that path. And you have signed a transfer agreement with the UW system that kind of gives more clarity to the steps to getting to that four-year or that baccalaureate degree. What is the new transfer agreement able to do for students?
It is just an expanded list of courses that are explicitly identified to apply at all the technical colleges and all of the UW four-year institutions. So that it's called the Universal Transfer Agreement. And it started out with 30 credits and is now at 72. Mm-hmm. And that it's not a whole degree transfer agreement. Those are done separately, but these are identifying courses. So if you, for example, if you're a student who takes written communication, which is a basic gen ed requirement for most associate degrees or four-year bachelor's degrees, that course, you can be confident now, will apply whether or not you transfer to any UW institution, among UW institutions, or into technical college system or any of the technical colleges. So it just gives the students that extra reassurance. They are not on their own to go to a new college or university and say, hey, I've got these courses. Will you accept them? Will you apply them to my new degree? And so that's, I think, going to open up a lot more opportunities for students.
Yeah, not having to read that fine print or go course by course to figure out whether each course will transfer. We're talking with Morna Foy, president of the Wisconsin Technical College System, as we discuss the system and the impacts to higher ed. 800-642-1234. You can join in. Melly is joining us from Madison. Hi, Melly.
Hi, good morning. I have a daughter who started Madison College this semester, and I was completely impressed by the facilities and the staff and everything there. And I'm just wondering, like, I really feel like there's not enough awareness, even though there's lots of print literature and things being sent out. It's so much more impressive when you're on campus than you can imagine or show on a piece of print literature. So I think, I guess if there was more awareness, I don't know, in social media or things like that, that maybe the facility could attract more students. Mm,
thank you for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Millie. I want to just say that you're joining on and calling in today is part of our overall process. You know, as community colleges, we emphasize in our investments in our student programming. So any word of mouth support we can get to market programs and to share your daughter's experiences is terrific. I think that, you know, that's something that the technical colleges are also trying to use technology for. And the pandemic has made that more difficult because one of the ways that we do promote our programs and get the word out is by having students meet each other and share their own stories with their own networks. Mm-hmm. I mean, as I've said before many times, most of our students are adults. They're working. They're in the workplace. They have students. They have potential college students of their own kids. And if they can get on campus and meet others and you know, have that experience, then they tend to pass that on. It's been more difficult in the past year when not all, but you know, we had more of our students going to school online.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really looking forward to having much fewer of our students be kind of in that situation and back on campus. Especially Madison College is one of a few technical colleges this year that have some new facilities that they have been working very hard to put together, and it's great to see the community using them. For example, the South Campus at Madison College.
Well, to speak to awareness and to speak to working on enrollment growth, I'm wondering what budget needs are you advocating for lawmakers to address in the technical college system? I mean, we last spoke in January before the state budget process happened.
Right. Yes, we did. And, you know, I just want to say right off the bat, I need to thank both the legislature and the governor for new investments that they made in the technical colleges in two areas. One, our general operations, which is very important. As you know, the federal help we got is temporary, and it was, you know, on a reimbursement basis. So it was great to have the state of Wisconsin recognize the importance of technical colleges in their local communities. And also for students themselves directly and increased financial aid, and also for our grant programs in particular, you know, short-term credentials that can help people get back to work more quickly, can meet some employer needs faster, and also that integrate some adult learning and occupational programming. And that's the reason why that's so important, Kate, is because there's a group of our in our society, certain individuals that, you know, they are not in a place where they can access best paying jobs,
mm-hmm.
and they're not in a place where they can meet the demands that employers have right now for some high skills, both soft and technical. And so these kind of integrated programs, which we've used much of the money that we got in this last budget to support, are really going to, I think, be a game changer for a important group of our workforce that we need to move upward.
Well, along those lines of the technical skills and the soft skills, do you advise students on their chances of finding a job after completing a degree program? How likely is it that your technical college grads land jobs, and who is helping them do this?
It's extremely likely. We have placement rates well over 90% across the board, and we have in good economies and bad. And it's directly related to how we design programs. It's what we I talked about earlier in changing up the mix and array of our programming. We make those decisions in close conversations with employers around the state. And so we know that when we develop a new program and enroll students, that there is a job waiting for them at the end of that experience.
Hmm.
And that is borne out by our very high placement rates. I wouldn't say necessarily that we sit down and tell students where they should go or what program they should take.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that sort of just because of the job at the end of the tunnel. It's more about finding out what they are passionate about and what we offer, almost in every case, is, you know, we can show them a direct link, and not just that there's a job, but how much they're going to earn. We're very transparent about that.
We have President Morna Foy from the Wisconsin Technical College system as we look at how her system is holding up in the pandemic, what changes are on the horizon. Did you get laid off or go to a technical college to retool? What program are you in? How is it going? How do you think tech colleges could do more for businesses to address labor shortages in your community? Still time, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Morna Foy here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we check in on Wisconsin's technical college system. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Technical college grads, they have been on the front lines of this pandemic as nurses, as respiratory therapists, as pharmacy technicians, giving vaccines, to name a few. Wisconsin has 16 technical colleges, hundreds of thousands of students who attend these colleges each year. Are you one of them? Will technical colleges be able to graduate enough people to fill the needs in your community? 800-642-1234 to join in President Morna Foy with us for nine more minutes. President Foy, looking more broadly here at the federal level, President Biden wants to, said in a town hall, offer tuition-free community college, but was dropped over opposition from some Democrats. And instead, he said there would be a push to expand Pell Grants, Pell Grant awards, and other forms of financial aid. How would increasing grant awards or Pell Grants affect technical college students?
Well, obviously, increasing access to our programs is critical if we're going to produce the workforce that our state's employers need. And money is a big part of access for students. I think increasing Pell Grants can help, not obviously as significantly as free college, but it can make a difference. My priority right now at the federal level, and I'm joined actually by some of the larger two-year college systems in the country, is supporting a short-term Pell or a work-based Pell, it's sometimes referred to. So that's Pell, expanding Pell eligibility to programs that currently are not eligible for student financial aid because they are considered too short. But we know that they can make a huge difference in a person's earning potential, and they're definitely things that our economy needs. For example, CDL drivers. So those are... That's really my focus in the Pell program, is to expand the kinds of students and programs that can be funded through it. I think at the state level, we have to recognize that this is not a problem that the feds alone need to contend with. And that's why, you know, we're always pushing for new investments in the technical colleges and in their students. But we're also looking to reduce costs for students. Like open educational resources or free textbooks materials, transportation assistance, childcare assistance. Again, going back to our stackable credentials that allow you to build on your previous work without repeating courses. And of course, expanding our apprenticeship options. So those are all ways that we try to reduce the financial burden to students. And then we also need to work on creating an environment that all students can see themselves succeeding in. And so that's another part of the access puzzle beyond just direct financial assistance.
When students don't finish a program, what are some of the common reasons that they don't get that certificate or associate's degree?
I think that the demands of our students' lives are probably the number one reason. We saw that in the pandemic a lot. We have a lot of students who are parents, and when they lost their childcare or they had to be at home to help their kid go through their own classwork, that had a big impact on their ability to attend school. I think that employment is a very common response that our students give us, is that, you know, I met an employer, or I was contacted by an employer while I was in this program, and they said they'll take me right now. And I can't miss that opportunity. Now, the good thing about that, Kate, is that we've really found employers also appreciate the stackable credential or pathway model, because it allows them to hire employees who have the skill set they need in that particular moment for that particular job or opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then if they build a relationship and it's a positive one, we find that the employers themselves are paying for students to come back to technical college and take that next step on the pathway. And then that results in a promotion, if you will, or a new added responsibility in their place of work. So it's a very positive and integrated process for both employers and the students when they can get their employer to basically finance their educational path.
Yeah, buy into that. Talking with Morna Foy, president of the Wisconsin Technical College System, Andrew in Waukesha is here to share an experience. Andrew, go ahead. What is on your mind?
Yeah, hi, good morning. So I'm thankful that the guest mentioned pathways and skills, because my call deals directly with that. I went to Marine Park Technical College. I studied water quality technology. And then I moved to Milwaukee to work at a water plant. And at the time, there was an effort to create a water technology program at MATC. The Milwaukee Water Council supported it. You had businesses that supported it. I would go to those quarterly meetings and I would say, hey, look, as an operator who just got a degree like this, why don't you add these things to your curriculum, specifically PLC programming, which is how all water plants run. And it would be a skill that not only applied to water, but just about every other industrial field out there, automated technology. And I'm not going to say that I was ignored, but when they finally came out with the program, it included absolutely no PLC programming. So I feel like you're spending so much time getting this input and having these meetings and having pathways and all that, and you're not seeing the forest for the trees, because the specific skills that are needed for the future are being ignored.
Andrew, we're short on time here, and I want President Foy to respond. Go ahead.
Yeah, Andrew, thank you very much for the call, and I hope that your experience with Moraine Park was a positive one as a student. I will say that the process of developing new programs, there is compromise and there is a push and tug, because we have employers weighing in, we have experienced personnel weighing in, like people like yourself. And sometimes we develop programs for very specific employment opportunities. So if the employers in the Milwaukee area were looking for, and again, it depends on, is this an associate degree program? Is this something that we're going to try to do in a short-term credential? Is this something that we're going to do as a technical diploma? All those things also impact the extent to which or what, how much different knowledge and skill sets that we can build into the program. So I'd love to talk to you about this some more. I know we're running out of time, Kate, but yeah. I still appreciate the call very much.
President Foy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Morna Foy is president of the Wisconsin Technical College System. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.